This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
President Obama's focused on jobs while the Senate looks at ethanol subsidies.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. President Obama is in North Carolina today. He's touring an LED lighting plant that's created some jobs in this down economy. Meanwhile, tomorrow in the Senate, there's likely to be a vote on whether to end federal ethanol subsidies. The 45-cent a gallon tax credit for ethanol, the blended mixture of gas and corn, cost the federal government nearly $5.5 billion last year. And the sponsor of the ethanol scrapping amendment, Oklahoma Republican Senator Tom Coburn, says that money is needed to help balance the budget. But some conservative groups, such as Americans for Tax Reform, headed by Grover Norquist, say ending the subsidies is like raising taxes. Senator Coburn is with us on the phone to talk about the legislation. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Why end the ethanol subsidy?
Well, first of all, we can't afford it, number one. For the $6 billion that we will have paid out this year, we will have borrowed $2.5 billion from the Chinese to pay it. Number two is we're subsidizing the blending of ethanol. We have a federal law that mandates they have to blend it anyway. And, oh, by the way, they don't want the money. We have a letter from all the blenders saying we don't need this money.
So what's been keeping the subsidy in place then?
The Farm Belt legislators.
And this is all a political game, do you think?
Well, I don't know. It's a political game. You know, 40% of our corn is going to be used to make ethanol this year, and yet the price of food is skyrocketing. And so we've created a false demand for this. What we really need to do is utilize our own resources. And I'm not against ethanol. I just don't think we ought to necessarily incentivize it with our tax dollars.
And speaking of incentives, though, what about the subsidies that go to oil and gas producers
I think that's a legitimate point to raise, but there is no actual subsidy. What there is tax expenditures that are not tax credits. We certainly shouldn't subsidize with direct taxpayer money to cause somebody to do something. We don't do that at all in the oil and gas industry.
Would you be in favor of relooking at some of those oil and gas?
What I want to do is look at the whole tax code, because what we've done is we've misdirected capital in the tax code. And if, in fact, we change those things, what we'll see is we can lower tax rates and actually get more revenue for the federal government.
What about the critics who say, and by critics, I'm talking about, obviously, Grover Norquist, saying the end of the ethanol subsidy is akin to a tax increase?
I don't think anybody in America is going to believe that. When we go borrow money to pay the largest oil companies in the country to blend ethanol into gasoline, that's just not spending money that we could save. And so I don't think it has anything to do with being a tax increase.
Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma. Senator, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are mixed right now. The NASDAQ pretty much flat, down about a tenth of a percent. But the S&P up slightly. The Dow is up 15 points at 11,967. The company that owns Perkins and Marie Callender restaurants is filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They blame rising food costs and a tough economy. News this morning that roast beef sandwich chain Arby's is being sold off to a private equity firm. It's a deal worth nearly half $1 billion. There's new data out by the Chronicle of Higher Education on how many members of state legislatures went to college. Turns out 75% have earned at least a bachelor's degree. But do those diplomas make them better lawmakers? We sent Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer to find out.
Democrat Emily Kane has served in Maine's legislature for 7 years. She has bachelor's and master's degrees in education and is now working on a PhD. She says her higher learning helps her think critically, especially when she's presented with research or statistics.
Who collected the data? Was it an organization with an agenda?
But you don't have to be a pointy head to be a good state legislator. Sometimes it helps not to have a degree. Scott Smallwood is managing editor of the Chronicle of Higher Education.
But there's a strong history in America of not wanting to be governed by a sort of specialized elite.
Smallwood says only a little more than a quarter of all Americans have college degrees. Lawmakers without degrees say they understand their constituents' problems better than Ivy Leaguers. In fact, the Chronicle found some lawmakers who touted their lack of formal education, saying they went to the School of Life or gun school. But from where I sit in Washington, D.C., about one of every 30 congressmen went to Yale. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Novo Nordisk since 1923, combining drug discovery with technology to turn science into diabetes treatments at novonordisk-us.com. And by Manta, connecting millions of small business owners and new customers every day on the web at manta.com. Marketplace Innovation Reporting is supported by the 2011 Jaguar XJ. Learn more at a local dealer or at jaguarusa.com.
Facebook is minus a few faces. 6 million users in the U.S. last month ditched their Facebook accounts. And the number of accounts in Canada, Russia, and the U.K. is down as well. That's according to new data from a company called Inside Facebook. The BBC's Rebecca Singer has more.
Facebook is still racking up users in new markets like Mexico and Brazil. But according to this data, it seems that once half of a country's population is logged into Facebook, the social networking site stops growing. Chris Green is a technology industry analyst at Davis Murphy Group. He says that makes up most of the core market.
If you think about it, around about half the population, a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on where you look, will comprise of those between about 16 and 60. Anything outside of that, or those really too young to either use the service or to actually appreciate and understand it.
But don't write off further expansion in the countries where it was first successful. Green says although Facebook isn't actively reaching out to older users yet, the over 60s are increasingly being drawn in by the big advertisers, who are intentionally trying to bring older users onto the site because they have so much spare cash. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
And finally, a new study confirms men care more about our cars than we do about our bodies. In a survey by the Men's Health Network and Abbott Laboratories, nearly 70% of men said they find it easier to maintain their cars than they do their own personal health. And 40% said they're more likely to take that car in for a checkup than take themselves to the doctor. Gosh, if we were only born with an instrument panel and gauges. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles on Twitter at Radio Chio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
A complex drug trafficking operation from Mexico to Phoenix involved trekking through the desert for days and hiding in abandoned homes. Took a lot of people and time to pull off, not to mention cash.
There's actually a lot of money being spent, but if there wasn't that much money to be made, you know, where would they be?
I'm Tess Vigeland, tracing a drug route next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.